computer too.
Okay, cool. All right, cool. Well, we'll give this another shot. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's August 28th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for funded startups and enterprises that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So no matter where you find yourself on this journey, we're here to help you launch better products faster so that you can free up your time for actual innovation. So to do that, head over to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Answer a few quick questions and you'll book a meeting with me directly. All right, so let's get into the announcements here. Oh, well, I skipped over some other parts. You can join us live by going to cloudposse.com/officehours, and we're going to be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/cloudposse, and you'll find the recording there. All right, now let's get into some news and announcements. All right. So the first one here was something that was actually shared last week. It didn't catch my attention accidentally. It was posted in the channel, so some of you might have seen it. The article talks about a potential attack vector of using artifacts, so GitHub artifacts in GitHub Actions. And I didn't have a chance to delve into it too deeply, but I suspect I know the attack vector they're talking about because I kind of ran into it myself accidentally before. One example here, yeah, and that's what they're talking about, is if you're using the GitHub Actions to clone a repository, that will use your GitHub token. And if the options to that GitHub action for cloning the repo are configured to persist the tokens, those will be in the .git/config file of the repo that was cloned. So depending on how you're using artifacts or caching capabilities of GitHub actions, you might be persisting that token. Now, that is a short-lived token. So I think that's probably this why they call it a race condition. So for the duration of the remaining execution of that workflow, that artifact is going to have a valid token, but that token will expire. Anybody have corrections or more to add to this? And specifically the part like github.com, Cloud Posse. So if we take a look at any one of our repositories like Atmos, and we go to .github, workflows, and like build, one of the first steps in most actions is something like this. By default, the tokens aren't persisted, but if you're doing anything like programmatic commits or wanting to do a certain Git operations, you're going to want to enable the Git token to be persisted so that subsequent steps in your workflow can call Git commands that operate on the remote origin. And if you do that and you're using artifacts, that's where there's some risk that this leakage happens. Let's see in the chat, is there anything there? And nothing, just a bunch of bots. All right. Next one was just something that apparently happened actually a month or two ago. I just didn't realize it. DevOps Weekly, which has been a news one of the sources that I always look at for what's happening and getting interesting things going on, they've gone on a hiatus. And they're not necessarily sure if or when they will return. But it's one of the first newsletters, apparently, going back to about 2010, related to DevOps. Next announcement. If you all recall that incident that happened back in, I think it was around May, we talked about it here in office hours when someone provisioned a S3 bucket that also happened to be the S3 bucket that was used in the examples for, what were the, Matt, do you remember what the example was for?
I don't know.
I thought it was funny because like a week later we were or so we were using the same code, and that was
It was
or like
Loki.
Loki? Loki.
Loki,
Yeah,
that's what
that's
it
what it
was.
was.
Because Dan, you were working on it. So Loki, Loki published Loki in their docs had a default bucket, I believe, that all their examples pointed to. And if you and if somebody happened to realize that and provision that bucket and then got a massive bill for that.
Is their default Helm chart had that bucket as a static string in there. So you have to update it. If you just provision it without overriding that default, then it would point to it.
And in this case, even if you provision that bucket and somebody discovered it or somebody wanted to financially DOS attack you, they could have just made a whole bunch of S3 requests against that. Even if they're 404s or 403s or 401s or 500s, it would cost you. Well, Amazon quickly responded to that, made some temporary fixes, and they have now rolled out a permanent fix across all AWS regions and expanded some of those status codes. So this link here that we'll share is the full list of AWS status codes. It's basically 400s and 500s are not charged for anymore. I do believe I didn't this move permanently. I can't believe I would assume that they are charging for that, but this page is all about what they're not billing for, so I guess not. Am I misreading that? So in other words,
I
redirects
think
would be.
that the actual response of the three XXs are not counted as requests, but the following the link to the redirect when you actually get the content to where it's redirected, that's counted as a request.
So it's not charged twice. Got it. Yeah. And it does specifically say that 3xx, 4xx are not charged. So, yeah, if you're using S3 for redirects, those are basically free now. Obviously, not if your destination is also on S3, you're going to pay for that. But if you're just using it for redirects, you're good. All right. Now let's see that get exploited. Next one is something I saw also Michael was sharing on LinkedIn. Why did that not open? It's Amazon has extended the ability for you on your instance to also check the health of your EBS volumes. This is nice if you want to gracefully degrade within like some server application, for example, by monitoring that health check endpoint. One sec, Matt, can you shoot, never mind, just gonna ignore this. Right, next one. Next announcement was this one here. I admit that I forgot that the Terraform lock file was really just based on provider pinning. And it's interesting that Terraform Core doesn't yet do this for modules. So lock files are convenient when you're doing a combination of less strict pinning on your modules and less strict pinning on your modules. And you also want to have stable deployments. So if you commit your lock files, like you do in a lot of other programming languages, you can ensure that a consistent deployments are using the same back-to-back deployments are using the same versions of modules, even if upstream versions were pushed.
I had in my experience committing the log files could also assure that you can't deploy. So sometimes the versions with the SHA code may not exist. One moment they will and one moment they won't. And so if you could get into the works on my laptop scenario very fast, particularly on Terraform, and I hadn't had that experience with lock mechanisms in Python or Ruby or other languages and things.
So, is that true still today? I believe in the beginning or in the earlier days, well, obviously those hashes are architecture provider specific. And if you're generating that file on Mac OS, for example, and you go to production, those won't have been updated. I thought that was resolved, so it's across multiple architectures, but maybe I'm wrong.
They had
Anyway.
it happen as of last year.
Okay.
But I haven't
You
been
also have that flag though.
using it extensively.
Somebody else was talking there. I couldn't hear.
Oh yeah, me. You have to add a flag for the multiple OS thing to actually work on the hash form. Like it's not something that they will work out of the box. You have to actually add the flags for all the operating systems you want the log file to be created for.
Basically, locally before you would commit that.
So in order to be able to use a log file on multiple operating systems, you will actually need to add a flag for each operating system, like after Mac OS, Linux, and Windows, for example. And they will create a new, I guess, a new line on the actual log file, which has the hash for each operating system.
Yeah, that makes sense. So TerraHash, though, is attempting to do this now for modules. Obviously, it's not built into the Terraform core or anything, but this is something you could add to your build process to enforce the same versions. And yeah, it's in the early stages of development and looks like not really too active in terms of development right now. I recognize Ned. Ned in the cloud, yeah. So he's, I forget what he's known for, but I recognize him.
He's got a YouTube channel and he does a weekly Terraform
That's what it is.
Teleform thing where I think he gives a lot of very good advice about features and things like that, and he covers them really well. But I think I found that a lot of his content doesn't necessarily pass the it actually works in production recommendations. Like a lot of it is very like naively viewed or works really well in the simple use case, but not when you get to truly complex systems, etc.
Yeah. Makes sense. Then we have another announcement was I think Michael was it shared this one. I'll click. So this was an interesting attack vector posting malicious examples or support that are exploitable on like SAC Exchange in hopes that other people start using them, or maybe that ChatGPT trains on them. So could definitely see that being a what do you call that? A long-term play. Not things that happen overnight, but planting the seeds there, and eventually the pay pays big dividends.
Yeah, this reminds me of discussions is like on the quality of Chat GPT or AI is that there's a lot of misinformation and junk on the internet, and that will be sourced to create the hallucinations or whatever in code or whatever. Like
Yeah.
tell people that they could get vitamins or minerals by eating rocks and things like that, because it'll take a 4-year-old prank Reddit post and take it as real data.
Yeah. Front yard pedestrian gate over. Exactly. All right, let's see here. Next announcement was for me. Yeah, this is something else I saw. So in macOS Sequoia, there'll be a prompting on a weekly basis reminding you that a particular app has screenshot and screen recording permissions. So, on the one hand, slightly annoying nag. On the other hand, nice that this kind of vector will be a lot more difficult to implement. So you'll be constantly reminded if apps are, violating your privacy.
Front yard pedestrian gate open.
All right. Let's see. Were there any other announcements? I need to take maybe a quick 2-minute break to reach out to the plumber who's got a water leak here.
Well, I was gonna mention last time I mentioned that I had some traction or fanfare or whatever on my pets versus cattle article. And so inspired, I wrangled with another one. It's hard not to go off in the deep end in complexity when writing these concept articles, but I managed to crank out another one on bake versus fry. So the old and new, the Iron Age, the Cloud Age. And so I was happy about that. And people seem to like that one.
Did you
Nice.
share the link again here, or we can?
Let me paste it in here. Let's see. I just pasted it. Hopefully, wait, no, I pasted it to the AI bot meeting notes.
Yeah, I just posted a thing in the general chat. I got pulled off into a direct message thread with the AI bot unintentionally because it posted to me. And so I've been trying to interact on chat and it's not working. So anyone who's trying to chat, switch to the team chat in your chat.
Did it go to the meeting? I just pasted it again, not the direct message. Like the
Yeah,
AI
it's good.
bot forces it to direct message and
It's so annoying. And it's a third, it's someone else's bot that joins. I think we triaged it last time that it's like the first person to join is the default and the chat bot.
no. It's actually not. It's because the chatbot DMs you to tell you that it's in the meeting. So that it's not a surprise that it's there. So it DMs you to say like this person added like the whatever meeting notes bot. So it DMs each person that, and then when you go to the chat, because you received a DM from the bot, it's default. It thinks that you want to respond to the bot. Yeah.
Nine. All right, so here's the link from you. Copy link. All right. So when searching for bake versus fry concept in doubt. I've always heard the term let it bake in. I've never heard let it fry as it relates to our business. Can you fill me in on that?
So the olden days, like say in the Iron Age, there used to be imaging. People remember Ghost, Norton Ghost, and all that stuff that was popular on the clients. But on the server side, it didn't take purchase because, I mean, it did exist. Those tools do exist. But what happens is when you have to have all the software versions and components, you get to the n times n minus one combinations, and you have to create a golden image library of all these different combinations. So it gets really cumbersome. And so then Kickstart, later Pre-Seed were used to roll out the systems and CF Engine, Chef Puppet later. And a lot of times a combination of both, you might use Kickstart to put the puppet agent on there. And then later when the machines boot up, they take over and configure themselves. Later over time, the cloud basically, with like auto scale groups and things like that, imaging has become more popular, but or at least like destroying the systems become popular, but change config is still heavily used. And I think Docker, because of its layer imaging approach, where each layer could have like the different components to be configured, like you have a package layer, and then the rest of the software layer. So if you don't change your package manifest, just change the software, you only affect the different consecutive layers. So that made imaging with Docker like just crazy popular, and that's why we, in part why immutable production or immutable infrastructure so popular. And so that's kind of the shift to the bake. But frying is still kind of used conceptually at deploy mode, because you still put your environment variables for some configs or a mounted config file. And so that would be considered frying.
Got it. I got it. Yeah.
A service discovery could still be used, like if you had functions and things like that, you could use service discovery in a KVE, and then based on its discovered role, it could go out and fetch the appropriate KVE values for the role of web in stage, you know, for example, and then auto configure itself. And that could be a pure bake scenario, because then it's not, it's totally immutable at that point. And so I just kind of wrote like what the concept was and then how it's kind of applied and the legacy and current stuff. And actually, legacy style is still used quite frequently. It's just a lot of people may not know it. So for example, like the Google Firebase team uses Salt Stack heavily to deploy out all their servers. We'll never see it. Of course, we'll get a nice web REST API to control it. But the people setting up the data centers that make these things happen, they still use these older tools. And it's also was used in web too for like static site versus templates. So I just put a site segue there, how it's also applied in a similar industry.
So the interesting, you're saying Firebase doesn't run on Borg like everything else?
Well, they'd set the initial servers up. Like, for example, like when we do EKS, for example, we're going to set up a bunch of worker nodes that has an image.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's not using Kubernetes to set up Kubernetes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to bake the workers. Once the workers deploy, then we change off and use another system. But the lay the groundwork could use the old school stuff. But we'll never see that. You know, they're dealing with that layer.
Yeah, I haven't heard to bare metal referred to as the Iron Age, but I like it.
Through a lot of cloud offerings too, when you need unique architecture, you're forced into this world. Like, you know, it's hard to run 96 CPU Docker images for a lot of people, and so it's a lot easier to bake an image on a VM.
I think the concepts, kind of the general concepts, are important, because sometimes some people are using hybrid approach, or they have to roll their own data centers. This cut costs. It just depends where the company's maturity is and what they're using. Or maybe they still come from one paradigm and they want to move to the next paradigm. They don't know how to get there. So if you have kind of the higher level concept, you could apply both. If that makes sense, you could adapt.
Duffy, I saw you raise your hand.
Oh, I was trying to react and I clicked the wrong thing.
Okay.
I was trying to give a thumbs up.
And then I think another one tool that I came across that was extremely useful just for the concepts was I came across was Console. I don't put it in here. I'm not sure if I mentioned it or not, but for service discovery. And then scaling it. Oh, I did kind of mention it. And then that kind of concept is useful just across the board, because you see service discovery that's baked into these orchestration platforms like Kubernetes, and then enhanced and made it with like service meshes and things like that. So,
yeah.
And if people had to do old school and stuff like that, I'd, you know, roll your own. I'd probably use something like Console to get into the auto healing likeness that Kubernetes has, at least in some limited way.
What Console, I mean, I think that it resonates to me what you said, because going back to like 2010 or so, that's when we were dealing with a lot of these problems of service discovery, and now not really thinking about it too much. So Console for us hasn't come up very often, but I'm curious, you know, who's using Console a lot these days? And, you know, is it more in the bare metal environments? Is it more in the enterprise context? Where are you?
I think like there's a this series of books called DevOps Toolkit, and I think one of the books you see they have different versions of it, and it usually depends on the time. So one version they'll talk about all the change configs, and then next they'll get into like auto healing. They had another book that will be more with some stuff like console. So I think console was a brief niche where it was used when things like Kubernetes didn't exist. It's still kind of the one path or one solution you could use if you wanted to do that kind of dynamic discovery in VMs, if you weren't using Kubernetes. And then also, like, I did come across some companies that were using Nomad, and of course, if they use Nomad, they would use the console for the service discovery within Nomad. I know Circle CI uses Nomad for their infrastructures for is their rollout. And if you wanted to do the enterprise version of Circle CI on on-premise deployment, you would have to deploy a Nomad infrastructure and then put their solution on it. I don't know if that's changed, but that would be, if on-premise deployment enterprise, you'd have to do Nomad, and likely that would be with console as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I see their references to it.
So it's, obviously Kubernetes is ubiquitous, but there are some niches that do use Nomad, and with that would be console. And I'm assuming there are even smaller niches might use console, and some cases even Swarm, like Swarm's still around. It seems like the other one, Mesos, is completely kind of dead now because they're trying to deprecate it or have deprecated it. But the concepts behind it are like important, because if you also had to get into discussions like, why do we need Kubernetes or whatever? Well, this is where we're at, and this is what we need, and you could explain these things in meta concepts that are applicable across the board. So if we didn't do Kubernetes, we'd have to do these 13 things. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
All right, well, let's move into Q&A portion. Any questions that we can get answered today? We got a lot of people here. Can probably get you an answer. This is the open-ended portion of the office hours. Really anything. Could be career advice, could be problems you're struggling, thinking about architecture-wise, Terraform-wise, CI/CD, GitHub Actions, anything.
Oh, I was.
Admod so well.
Go.
Right. I have a question
Miguel?
with Admos.
Okay, go ahead, Miguel.
Okay, thank you. So I'm wondering if there's a way to override I guess the role assumption or profile assumption with when using Admos. Like if you're using a profile, an AWS profile, for example, to log in or authenticate to AWS, whatever, and apply a Terraform. Well, I guess that almost Terraform. Is there a way to override that in the CLI with the almost YAML configuration? Something like that?
Yeah, let me unpack a few things. Also, I think there's additional context. If I'm correct, you've asked similar questions recently in
Yeah.
this Slack. Okay, gotcha. I think it's the same. So there's Atmos, there's our AWS reference architecture, and they shouldn't necessarily be confused. So there's some things that we do in our AWS reference architecture that do more of that role assumption in our Terraform modules themselves rather than at the CLI level like Atmos. So if I'm understanding correctly, I think your question is possibly two part. One is that, is there a way to prevent our AWS reference architecture root modules that we call components from assuming roles? And if we prevent them from assuming roles, is there a way or could we alternatively provide the roles that need to be assumed in the Atmos configuration itself?
Not necessarily with your, because I know that the your like the repository you have for the Terraform AWS components, which is I guess your opinionated way of doing it, which is fine. But I have my own workflow, I guess, using my own modules, I guess the business modules, and I used to use a profile for logging for authenticating in locally, but when I moved to the CLI, to the GitHub Actions portion of it, I wanted to use OIDC, and as replacing, or I guess replacing the, it will crash because of the configuration I have already, which is using a profile. So I guess there's workarounds, but I wanted to see if there's a way to overwrite that instead of like you're basically telling it, hey, don't use the profile. Is that
Matt, you want to take a stab at this one?
Yeah. I was going to say I could definitely answer this. So I think your best approach would be that. So in the same way that Atmos allows you to specify variables, and then it basically deep merges all of those variables and passes them to Terraform on the command line. When you run Atmos, so does it allow you to do the same thing with providers. So you could, in your case, what you could do is you could set the provider configuration for the AWS provider, which allows you to specify the role to assume. You basically can set that on a per component basis. So right there, Eric, actually, if you scroll, yep, exactly. If you do that, you could basically set the provider configuration to assume a particular role. And then when Atmos runs, what it will do is it will provide a provider override file that it dynamically generates at runtime to tell your AWS provider to assume that particular role, just as if you had hard coded it into the provider configuration within your module, within your root module itself. So were you able to follow that?
Yeah, I do that. Yeah. But I wanted to override the Atmos configuration to change how I authenticate it. So instead of like generating the some role, I do profile, right? Instead of assume role, I use AWS profile, right? And I wanted to change that to assume role when I use CI. Is there a way to override the Atmos configuration?
So having one way on the command line, one way in CI.
Yeah.
Or
maybe using the Atmos CLI with a flag or something. Is there a way to do that? There's no way.
So one thing we support in Atmos are wildcard includes.
Mm-hmm.
So you could create a CI folder that is empty by default, for example, and your CI system could write its configs to the CI folder, and then you include that. That way, locally, there's nothing there, and then when it's in CI, it has those configs.
No. But he's saying locally he has profile specified like in the actual provider config. So it's like AWS profile equals, my privileged profile or whatever. And then when you use it in CI, you want it the other way so that you basically get rid of that. And then do that. Yeah. What I just wanted to see really quick is I forget. I think there's a, I think there's the ability to, if you right there, sorry, Eric, if you go back to where you just were, I'm thinking about this. If you actually in there put profile colon null, I believe that will actually override the profile that is specified like in the provider. So it will actually override it by like saying that it's null at that point, which is the same as not having a value in Terraform. And then it would only take the assume role, config. So like on between lines 4 and 5, if you added in like profile colon null, I think that would actually do what you want to do.
Okay.
But that wouldn't work locally. So then to make it work locally, then you have to do kind of what Eric said is like, conditionally, or do that, like move this config, so that it's only included when you're in CI versus locally.
I see. Is there like, can I use if else on Go templates in YAML?
Yes.
Yeah, and you can probably just also use an environment variable, something like this too. So then you can just have that work one way or another.
That's true.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest route right there. So I shared these links in the Zoom chat here if they're helpful for you or anyone else.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Any other questions we can get answered?
I just saw an event. I saw Adam Jacobs posted something on Twitter recently. That is, they open sourced his SystemInit tool.
One second. Sorry. I fell victim to the same thing everyone else did, and I messaged the stupid read.ai bot. So. One more time. What was that you were saying?
Oh, I was saying I noticed something. I saw a recent posting since our last meeting that Adam Jacob, founder creator of Chef, was no longer with Chef, but has a different company where he makes this tool called System Initiative, and he recently announced that it's been open sourced.
Oh, System Initiative, as it wasn't open source from the beginning.
That's what I'm not sure about, but I thought it was. But he says we're proud to open source System Initiative software under the Apache license. So maybe they changed the license. I'm not really sure on the specifics.
Last year, license was last changed. Yeah. Matt, I know you had looked into System Initiative when it first came out, just at a high level. Have you have you been following it at all? No.
No. Too many things I'm tracking in my brain right now. I haven't been able to spend the time looking at it.
I relate to that.
Yeah, there are really just too many projects born every single week in our.
Yeah. The other thing is I feel like I have to be like passionate about it or interested in it or want to use it or whatever for me to truly do like a service to looking at it. And generally, like I don't want to like poo-poo this, but if you go back just really quickly, like to the GitHub, this is the guy who started Chef, right? And somehow this project that's been around for quite some time only has fewer than 1,000 stars. So I feel like something is like not worthwhile for it. Like, I don't know. That like always throws me off a little bit. Like, how come this isn't much more popular?
Yeah. Also, I have to say their website could use a little bit of a makeover.
Yes. Yeah.
Rather dated.
Well, okay. Those who live in glass houses.
Yeah, so is ours. So let's see, what other questions can we get answered? Got about another 10, 15 minutes here if there's some questions we can cover. Yeah, check anything in the office hours Slack. I don't see anything here. There was Tyrone shared this link. I didn't have a chance to look at it. I was not quite sure what problem it solved for me. Let me go back here. Terraform AWS policy action. So why use this module? Yeah, I wasn't, it didn't immediately jump out to me what this is solving. Can someone clarify for me? All right. AWS IAM actions. All right. Well, if nothing else today, maybe we end a little bit early. Doesn't happen often, but every now and then we are short of material. So thanks everyone for attending office hours this week. We'll be back at the same time next week, same time, same place. If you haven't yet registered for office hours, you can do so by going to was it cloudposse.com/office hours here, cloudposse.com/office hours. We'll be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/cloudposse. And if you're interested in working with Cloud Posse at some point, we can, help build out your strategy for Terraform. We specialize on all things AWS and provide a lot of thought leadership in how to approach infrastructure as code at scale. So go to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Answer a few quick questions and book a meeting with me directly. Talk to you soon.
All right, cheers.